Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. Yo paticca samuppadang passati so dhammang passati. Yo dhammang passati so paticca samuppadang passati ti. It has been quite a while since I gave a talk on dependent origination. And I don't know how many years ago it was I gave the last talk. The talks will always be a little bit different. And this particular talk I wanted to focus just on the seeing of the Dhamma, and especially on the uprooting of the delusion of self, to see how this all ties in with the quote which I gave at the beginning of this talk, that the one who sees dependent origination sees the Dhamma. The one who sees the Dhamma sees dependent origination. But soon, hopefully, that will become clear. But we begin just in this practice of developing the mind, developing it in both virtue and samadhi, to give the opportunity for wisdom to arise. And in particular, the wisdom which examines and digs out this delusion of self. And then in the last discourse teaching which I gave here a week ago, I mentioned once again the delusion of self usually lies in two areas. Taking the doer, that which does, as me, mine, myself, or taking that which knows as me, mine, myself. In one of those two areas is usually where the delusion of self lies and hides itself, giving you the impression that there's someone in here pushing the buttons, taking control, and also experiencing the world around you and owning those experiences and in control of, in power of certain areas where you think that you have a right to do, to control, to be in charge. Now, one of the problems with uprooting this illusion of self is that it's one thing to say all this is impermanent, all this is dukkha, is suffering, is not happiness, all this is not beautiful, it's asupa, all this is not self. But in any investigation, just saying what it isn't is usually not sufficient to give rise to confidence, to full understanding. If it isn't these things, the mind would ask, then what is it? What is it that we call like experience, like life? What is this sensory apparatus that we can know exists? There is hearing, there is feeling, there is thinking. There is something there. And unless the person sees quite clearly with full wisdom what this is, then they'll fall into the traps of many other religions, saying sometimes that I am that, or this is a self, or God is that, or all these other views which arise from not seeing deeply enough into the truth of things, into what actually is that, what is this? Someone who says that that is God or that is I am that, is someone who has yet to see deeply enough into what this is. Fortunately, the Buddha gave a very good map, some very good instructions about what this actually is that you're experiencing right now. What you're experiencing right now is just five khandhas, the manifestation of the six senses in operation. This is how the Buddha described this, which is happening right now. Five khandhas, or six sense bases. But with the investigation into non-self, to see why the illusion of a self actually occurs and is maintained by so many human beings and other beings in this cosmos, to see why, one has to understand that it's the continuity, or rather the apparent continuity, of this thing we call the five khandhas. This apparent continuity of the sensory experience, which fools us into taking a perception, a view, a conceit of self. It's a continuity, the fact that it feels pretty much the same a few moments ago as it does now, as it will feel a few moments hence. There is the delusion of something going across from moment to moment. How else could there be this relationship? Fortunately, the Buddha gave that answer, which is the teaching of dependent origination. The relationship from moment to moment of the different experiences, the relationship from moment to moment of different sense consciousnesses, the relation from moment to moment of the five khandhas. We have this here to truly understand it. It's not enough just to see it right in the moment. To really understand this, we have to find where it came from and where it's going to. And we find out its causes and its results. Then we have an opportunity of breaking through this delusion of a continuous essence traveling through this whole process. In fact, once you start looking at cause and effect, what this thing we call the moment, the things as they are right now, where do they arise from and where do they go? This is where we don't just watch the moment, where we watch the process, the rise and fall, the development and the fading away, all of this thing which we call experience, life, sensing things. But it's only when you can see that the relationship, the cause and the effect are actually distinct and separated parts of the process with nothing going between them, can one fully understand the teaching of dependent origination, and one can fully uproot the delusion of self. Where did this moment come from? Is there anything in this moment which was there a few moments ago? Will there be any residue of this moment in the future? Is there anything which goes across all of this? Because it is a delusion of something going across which causes the deceit of a self. There was one of the monks, I think it was Lady Sayadaw, who described these moments of experience like many beads on a necklace with a string passing through them. And when there's a string passing through them, it's adapting a simile of the Lord Buddha, but I think the way that Lady Sayadaw described it was slightly different. When there's a string passing through each of these beads, they're linked together. And when one bead at the end of the necklace is hit or struck, the vibrations travel right through to the very end. The beads, the individual beads, stand for each moment of consciousness, distinct and separated if you can see it with wisdom. And the string stands for the delusion of self. That's all. If you look more closely and take out that string, you find the truth of the matter is that each of those beads is distinct and separate. I've mentioned before that once you understand the six types of consciousness, once you see them with clarity, you'll find that each of the different moments of consciousness is in most cases a mixture. Just speaking generally, not specifically here. In actual fact, they are distinct. There's, for example, what you're hearing now is followed almost immediately by the mind knowing it. Sound consciousness followed by mind consciousness. What you feel in your body immediately followed by mind consciousness. If you're smelling or tasting or seeing something, the sight consciousness immediately followed by mind consciousness. So much so that each of the conscious experiences has a sameness to it, a common quality, which again gives rise to the illusion of an essence passing from one moment to the next. And it's one of the insights which is most likely on the attaining of jhanas. When you see just the mind consciousness alone, unsullied by the other five consciousnesses, just mind consciousness without sight, sound, smell, taste or touch. When you see that and know that very well, when you come out into this ordinary conscious world, so to speak, then you can see what is actually happening. Once you know what mind consciousness is, you can, as it were, separate it and see what's alongside it when you're hearing something. You can separate mind consciousness and see what's alongside it when you feel something in the body. And then you know that it's this mind consciousness being so closely associated with all the other five that gives rise to this delusion. If you can separate it, you can see that each of these different consciousnesses is just like different colored beads. You can only see the different colors. You see, the truth of the matter is that one conscious moment rises and then passes away completely with nothing left, with no string going across at all. Another conscious moment arises and then fades away with nothing going across again. Sound consciousness arises and passes away, and then mind knows it, arises and passes away. Maybe the next one's a body consciousness, a feeling. It arises and passes away completely with nothing in between. But there's nothing to know, that nothing in between. There's no sense consciousness to realize that gap. Again, giving rise to the illusion of continuity. However, to be able to see this and to understand that, insight. You have to also understand, well, what is the, not just what goes across, what is like the causal relationship between each of these moments of consciousness? Because this is important, the causal relationship is where things like defilements come in. It's where things like hindrances have power over the mind. The causal relationship is what will keep samsara going, will keep you suffering, will keep you being born. And it's at the causal relationship where the Buddha aims dependent origination. When he started talking about the vijnana, the six types of consciousness, the nama-rupa, and the six sense bases, and passa, contact, and vedana, this is the stuff of sensory experience. He was showing just how these just work together. That consciousness is taken aside, as it were, and manifesting as the nama-rupa, as Venerable Sariputta described nama-rupa in the Samaditti Sutta. Now the rupa, the four elements and all those things derived from those four elements, the materiality has the senses or as consciousness experiences it, and the nama of vedana, sanya, this is the knowing of these things, the passa, chaitana, manasikara, the first two in that list of five is, I should say in English, sorry, is this thing vedana, the quality of pleasure, pain, or somewhere in between, associated with each act of consciousness, the sanya, the perception which arises at the same time. This is not a temporal sequence where one comes first and one comes afterwards. It's just looking at the same act of consciousness from different angles. You're either aware of vedana, aware of perception. Actually, vedana is a type of perception, really. Particular type of perception which was singled out by the Lord Buddha because of its importance in the scheme of causality. You've also got the dua, chaitana, and manasikara. You've got passa, the contact, the turning on of the senses. This is all the nama. So vijnana is like the consciousness, and nama-rupa is like the effects of consciousness, the tools of consciousness, which also cause consciousness. The two have to come together, rolling around, as it was said, and thereby producing the sense bases. When you talk about the sense bases, the salayatana, I don't know where the first person translated these things as like eye and ear and nose, because it's not just the physical eye, it's all of the nerves, the whole sensory apparatus. It's much better to call these six senses by the English names: sight, sound, smell, taste, sight and hearing, smell, taste, touch, mind. It's the sensory apparatus. It is caused, brought up by conscious experience, by the first conscious experience in a new life. And I think many of you know enough biology, anatomy, to show that as you experience the world, so those sense bases develop. Synapses, neural connections are made, or whatever it is, and the sensory apparatus starts to grow more sensitive. brings them into being, as it were, turns them on, continues to develop them throughout the whole life. And of course, that once the process is started, once at the first conscious moment of life, as the Buddha said, when the first jitter arises in the mind, when consciousness first appears in the mind, birth is to be taken from that point. It's in the Mahavagga Vinaya. So once you understand this is the start of the process, and continues on the vinyana, the nama rupa, developing the salayatanas, the six sense bases. And to know that once there are six sense bases, there has to be the contact from now and again. These are sensitive organs. Eventually there has to be things come into their range. They have to turn on the consciousness and contact arises. There has to be with that arising of that contact field of attention. There has to be the Vedana associated with each sensory contact. This is what happens with the thing we call experience. This is what you can see happening from the very time you were born, at all moments, right through to your death and beyond if you get reborn. This is like the process and how it works. But it has some very important consequences that Vedana, I'm not talking about particular types of Vedana, the pleasant, unpleasant or unpleasant. I'm talking about the very fact of being sensitive, of having these things. The Buddha said that these things are just like a cow who's had its skin taken off, without anything to protect its raw flesh, with flies, March flies that we have here in a month or two's time, sort of stinging it, biting it, harassing it all the time. It's a beautiful simile which the Buddha had for these things. Sensory experience is just like that. It's an irritation, it's suffering. Here it was going much deeper than just pleasure, pain and in between. It's saying all of these things, when looked at in a different way, are an affliction, is suffering. As we just recited in the Anatta Lakkhana Sutta, all Vedana, past, present and future, far and near, gross and refined, all Vedana, all of this is an abhada, it's an affliction. When you see this, then you get nibbida towards Vedana. When you don't see this, it's likely that you'll get craving towards the Vedana. And the craving towards Vedana is very weird, because it's not just a craving for pleasure, for the pleasant sensory experiences. Because I mentioned before, and as many of you will know from your personal experience, perhaps knowing people who are sick and who are dying, that certainly we would rather have pleasant Vedana. But if we can't have pleasant Vedana, we'd rather have painful Vedana than no Vedana at all. We'd rather be happy. If we can't be happy, we'd rather be than not be at all. The first craving, the craving is to be happy, is karma dhanha, craving for sensory pleasure in the world of the five senses. Second type of pleasure, bhava dhanha, is just the second type of craving, bhava dhanha, is just the craving to be. to have even pain rather than nothing at all. It's why people, when they're dying, not everyone, but some struggle for the last breath, even though they are in great pain, even though they know that just another minute of life means a minute of pain, and there's no way out. This pain all the way as long as they live. They'd rather have that pain than what they think is going to be annihilation and nothing. That's why they struggle. It's a craving to be. So that craving just works in many ways. And what it does, it wants you to take up this whole world, to take up control of this world, give rise to the doer, to give rise to the experiencer. More experience, please. I'd rather have it pleasant, but it doesn't matter, I'll take the painful as well, as long as there's enough pleasant there. It takes up the whole world of doing, constructing, the sankhara ing. When we talk of the dependent origination, it's almost a mirror from the first half to the second half. Just as we get craving and the taking up the upadana, there you can see the work of avijja, of delusion, and sankhara, the first two links or factors of the dependent origination. Just different ways of looking at the same process. Because of that craving, misunderstanding what Vedana is, not seeing it with nibbida, not seeing that all Vedana, whatever is felt, the Buddha said, is suffering. Because we think that there may be something, somewhere, which we can experience, which isn't suffering. Because even some people think that an arahat who's achieved enlightenment doesn't have any suffering. It's one of those little statements which I enjoy saying now and again, because it really stirs up people, sometimes even good monks, when I say the arahat experiences suffering. If I raise a few eyebrows and saying things like that, and it's an important thing to say, because it gets people looking at the experience of an arahat in a different way. Sure, they experience far less suffering than anyone else, and I think it's fair to say that in the whole cosmos of Buddhism that they have less suffering than anyone else. They are the happiest. But even the happiest still suffers. Remember what the Buddha said? That all types of existence, anywhere in the world, he said, I do not praise. Even the smallest amount of dung on a fingertip still stinks. That's what any type of existence, anywhere, in any form. Arahat is just a particular form of the five khandhas, a particular expression of the six sense bases. Just a part of the process, a special part of the process, just before it fades away. But all expressions of khandhas, all expressions of consciousness, it's all dukkha, all vijnana, all sankhara, sanya, vedana, all of it. Sometimes the only way that you can really know that is through insight, is through experience, but you don't need to be a full arahat to know that. Again, it's one of the insights which comes from jhanas. When you leave the world of the five senses, then you know that those five senses are an affliction. Strange, but the cow without its without its hide, with its flesh exposed to the flies, will just take that for normal. That's what it's like to be a cow. They actually get used to it. because they know no better. They know no different. The human being who's lived in the world of the five senses and has never found release from that world, has never gone to the pure radiant mind, alone, secluded from the world of the five senses, who doesn't know that bliss, will not be able to know that the five senses are dukkha, even their most refined form. The arahat who's not in jhana will be suffering the irritation of the five senses. And the arahat in jhana will be suffering the irritation of the sixth sense. Only when the arahat enters nirodha samapatti, the temporary extinction of all that is felt and perceived, will he be experiencing the bliss of nibbana, as it were, here and now. I've said as it were because nothing experienced there. This is a cessation of all of this, temporarily anyway. That's why I say all this is dukkha. But through not seeing this, through not seeing this first as the Four Noble Truths, that we take up this world, upadana. We crave for experience, we crave for pleasure. And in so doing, we take up this world, the upadana, and we create the world. We create the world, the Buddha called this the stations of consciousness. The seven stations of consciousness, he was saying. The first one, only the first one, the very lowest, meanest, basest station of consciousness, of all the heaven realms and the human realm, the karma loka, not all the heaven realms, the heaven realms of sensuality and the human realm. This is the basest, lowest realm. It's the station of consciousness. The next, I think three it was the concern with the jhana realms, a different way of organizing the four jhana realms into three. And there's three arupa realms, and then two dhatus. You can't really call them stations of consciousness, the realm of neither perception or non-perception, nor the asanya realm. But nevertheless, this is what the Buddha talked about, even in the Mahanidana Sutta, which is the sutta, the main sutta on dependent origination. Do you understand those stations of consciousness and why the Buddha taught them there? This is actually where the consciousness is inclined towards. Through craving, through taking up these things, you are inclining your consciousness to those areas. You're actually building them up. It's why I keep saying in the interviews to all of those who have come to my hut once a fortnight that you shouldn't be too upset or too discouraged the times when your meditation does become difficult. As long as you're inclining towards relinquishment, as long as you're inclining towards things like jhanas, as long as you're inclining towards cessation, to giving up, to peace, to nibbana, as long as you're inclining towards that, you are not building up the stations of consciousness where the mind can be reborn. You're starving it of a roosting place, to the point where if you develop these abandonments, these giving aways, at death the consciousness will have nowhere to go. It will be starved of a home and will not reappear again. If you incline towards the sensory realm, be careful Every time that you crave and take up a sensory thought or a sensory word or deed, speech or whatever, you are building up that station of consciousness. You know that the mind will incline there again and again and again. The habit forming, the conditioning of the mind, the stages of consciousness. This is what happens when you develop craving and taking up. Another way of looking at it is again those first two factors of the dependent origination. Because of delusion, not seeing these things as suffering, not knowing the cause of this suffering is craving itself, you start to build up hopes, dreams, of happiness and serenity in the sensory world, or even in the five material or immaterial realms, especially in the sensory realm. You make the karma, you aspire, you dream and hope. It's craving, it's taking up, it's creating new existence. When you go on to the next factor of dependent origination after upadana, taking up, is bhava. The three types of existence. The existence of the sensory realm, the world of the five senses, including this realm, and even the realm of Mara, the paranimitta vasavati realm. Those beings who wield power over others, who get off on controlling. Then the Rupa Loka from the Brahma realms, second jhana, third jhana, fourth jhana realms, the Arupa Loka. These are the three realms. The Arupa Loka being the immaterial realms. These are the three realms here. Even if you develop jhanas, and you aspire to those realms. You aspire towards jhanas. You're actually creating through that inclination the station of consciousness that there your mind will be reborn. That's where you will go to if you build up that station of consciousness strong enough. You create the karma to do this. You create the intention to do this, the causes. When the Buddha explained to Venerable Ananda about this factor of bhava, he described it in terms of these three realms, the karma dhatu, rupa dhatu and arupa dhatu, the sensory realm, the five material and the immaterial realms. He gave this beautiful simile of agriculture, that karma is the field. Even your aspirations will not be successful if you haven't got the karma which will allow these things to arise. Karma is a field. That vijnana, the consciousness, is the seed, the stream of consciousness. If the vijnana goes into a field, which is a good field, a rich karma, it's good. It's got a likelihood to grow there. It's why people create the karma to go to these realms. If the karma is not enough, no matter how much they desire it, they will not get there. They will not grow there. The consciousness will wilt and wither and will not take footing there. Karma is the field. Consciousness is the seed. And the moisture which enables it to grow there is craving. And for beings who are hindered by ignorance, fettered by craving, they will grow there. This will be the station of consciousness for them. And there they will find future rebirth. That's what bhava is. This is a whole process by which people get reborn. Remember what I said a few moments ago, that all Vedana is dukkha. In the deeper sense, all sensory experience is an affliction. Only when you see that with wisdom, with insight, you get the nibbida to realize that in any world there is no liberation and no real freedom. In any of these worlds of existence, even the one you're in now, the hope, the teaching of the Buddha is to end suffering by ending birth. With the ending of birth in any realm, their suffering will end. Even the Arahat, even the Lord Buddha, had to, as it were, wait to Parinibbana, to the full ending of suffering, the full cessation and termination of this process. A person who still wants to keep this process going, thinking that somewhere in some realm, I remember even many years ago, someone coming up to me and saying, yeah, we've got the teaching of Nibbana as well, it's a planet just beyond Uranus. Well, once you die, if you're really enlightened, that's where you get reborn. I actually said that. It's a crazy idea. Nibbana is parinibbana, is cessation. Flame going out. Not going east, west, south, north, up or down. Poof, gone. And you see there's nothing essential in the flame. And it's obvious it can go out. If there's a self there, an essence, then it's impossible to go out. The essence can't disappear because it's got no essence. If you see anatta, nibbana and parinibbana become possible. When you see dukkha in all sensory experience, then it doesn't just become possible, it comes, as it were, desirable. It becomes the only course which makes sense. It's only when avijja, the delusion, is broken, only at that point is this whole process stopped. The delusion is broken in one or two or three or four places. First break, its first destruction, is at the opening of the eye of the Dhamma, stream entry. It's the first seeing the emptiness of this whole process. This is not I. It's not me, it's not mine, it's not a god, it's not nothing either. It's just a process which is caused, as Venerable Asaji said to Venerable Sariputta, if I remember this quote correctly, that when asked what the Buddha taught, he said, the Buddha taught that that which arises passes away. He taught the cause of all that arises and is ceasing as well. This is what Asaji was talking about, what you're experiencing now. He taught it arises and passes away. It has a cause. It has an ending. But not a self which runs right through it. Not even for a minute, let alone for a lifetime or many lifetimes. Cause and effect sequence. One of the beautiful things about dependent origination, it was the Buddha's answer by seeing just how this process arises and completely passes away and yet still causes the next moment. By seeing that causal relationship in these very moments which you're listening to this talk, you can also see how that causal relationship gives rise to a new birth, a new body, a new life. It is the teaching of dependent origination which answers the question which often comes up through lay people. How can there be rebirth when the Buddha teaches anatta? How can anything go across? Nothing goes across, but there is still rebirth. Nothing goes across from moment to moment now, but there is still a stream of consciousness which can be discerned. Cause and effect, that's all. There's a simile which I've given here before. The cause and effect relationship can be looked on as action at a distance. The cause occurs in one moment, the effect occurs at another moment. But there's no letter or communication sent across. There's not a postman taking the information from one moment to the next. Or as I think Venerable Gunaratana has said, it's like the fax machine. You put in one sheet of paper in Perth, and then it suddenly appears thousands of miles away in England, with no piece of paper going across between here and the other side of the world. The cause and effect, to see that there's nothing going between them. And it's not as if the cause is stored somewhere in between. The cause now, the effect later. It's the emptiness, the space of this whole process. You can understand that and see that as it's happening right now. You can understand just how rebirth takes place and why rebirth takes place. If you incline the mind through craving, through upadana, incline the mind being the action of sankhara, karma formations, you're making the field. You're creating the sap. The consciousness will find root there. Stations of consciousness. Rebirth will happen. And any realm where you're being reborn, you will be equipped. The vijnana, the nama rupa, will create the six sense bases. Maybe not six sense bases. Maybe less sense bases, depending on which realm you get reborn into. But nevertheless, even one sense base is suffering, is dukkha, if you understand the Four Noble Truths. So once that is seen, you realize that this, which you've taken to be a self, is nothing more than its process, an empty process. Once described it like a processed pea. Fresh pea from the pod goes in the factory and it comes out processed. But actually that's not what this five khandhas are like. Because in that type of process, there was something in the original, what got put in the factory, which is still there at the end. In the process we call the five khandhas, there's nothing which was there in the beginning is there in the end. Completely different, but still a process, pure process, the process of existence. Seeing that with wisdom the first time means you've cut off the basic cause which will keep this cycle going. The Buddha said at the very most, seven more existences for you. Not more than seven, certainly not an eighth, very often less. That which keeps the process going, the illusion, the delusion, is fatally wounded. But still, this is the destruction of wrong view, once and for all. But still there can be perceptions and conceptions which are false. Even though the foundation has been taken out, the structure still stands. Weak, eventually it must fall, but there it still stands. It's still capable of creating 7 more existences. It's the first destruction of avijja. The next destruction and the third destruction of avijja will completely destroy the craving for sensory pleasure, for sensory comfort in the realm of the 5 senses. It will see with such wisdom that the realm of the 5 senses is absolute suffering. It will still find refuge in the realm of the 6 sense and the mind. As one of the monks kindly pointed out to me recently, in the very last sutta of the Majjhima Nikaya, in the Indriyabhavana Sutta, number 152, the Buddha described how a seka, a stream enterer, once returned, or an anagami, should develop the indriya. He should look upon all of the 6 senses with disgust, with aversion, yuck. This is how they develop the understanding that Vedana, of all the 6 senses, is an irritation, an affliction, is suffering. And when they see that in every moment, the bhava, the existence of the Kamaloka, is forever cut off for them. The anagami cannot return to worlds like this. The craving, the upadana, the taking up, has been cut off. The station of consciousness is destroyed. Even though there may be some karma left there, the field may still be quite rich. The vijnana, the consciousness, finds no moisture. It withers and cannot establish itself there. That's why that realm is once and for all cut off. There could be no more birth in this realm. The only birth possible, if you can call it a birth, the spontaneous arising in the pure abodes where the anagamis dwell, until even that fades out. So eventually seeing that even the craving or the taking up, if you want to call it that, of the happiness of the mind, the 6th sense, the purity of the mind, to see even that is suffering, non-self, impermanent. To see that, the anagami turns away from building up continuity in that world. It fades away. And it stops. The Arahat appears through the cessation of avijja, ignorance, illusion, sankhara, the karma which could give rise to any existence, is extinguished. So is the tanha, upadana, and bhava. When they die, if you want to call it that, parinibbana more properly, the vijnana cannot arise again. Birth, jati, cannot arise. Because there's no more jati, no more birth, there is no more suffering, old age, suffering and death. Because there's no more consciousness, there is no more nama-rupa, no more sense bases, no more contact, no more vedana, no more affliction. Process is ended. The job has been done. No more of this. This is what you're experiencing right now. Its cessation is the goal. It's the teaching of dependent origination, teaching of 4 noble truths, the special Dhamma of the Lord Buddha. we're about to finish the talk there. Is there any questions or comments anyone would like to make? Okay, I talked about tanha. I did not talk about vipava tanha. I think I've mentioned before that the vipava tanha, the way the Buddha meant it, he described it like a dog running around the same post. The post is the sense of self. The vipava tanha is experiencing some idea of suffering, but not experiencing or knowing, sort of non-self. So you try and solve the problem of superficial suffering by trying to destroy yourself. It is a person who still hasn't seen anatta, but has seen some form of suffering, and they respond by trying to destroy existence. But to destroy existence from a sense of self, like I want to kill me, the best simile I take from a character in Oliver Twist by Charles Dickens, it's like someone trying to eat their own head. Try and think about that, eating your own head. That's why it's like a dog who goes around the same post. Can never really escape from it. It's a craving which is based on delusion, stupidity. Thinking that you can destroy you. Like eating your own head. Just gives rise to more rebirth. Because the sense of self has not been eradicated. Does that answer the question for now? Yes. You're asking that for the sake of the tape, that in any particular moment, the particular type of sense base which is turned on, does that depend upon the strength of the stimuli which you're achieving? It's partially caused by the strength of the stimuli which you're receiving, but not necessarily so, that because of the attention which you're given to a particular object, you can actually almost, as it were, get stuck in a particular object. It may not be as strong a sensory experience as some of the others, but you just close your ears, your eyes, to those other experiences to see just how our particular senses continue going on, even though there's other things which are more strong, as it were. It's actually to see just how the strength is one thing, the chaitanya is another, the attention. To see all of the causal factors which give rise to this which we call sensory experience. It's not, strength is only one of the causal factors, there's many others. Person in deep meditation sitting next to someone who is just messing around. There's a very loud sound. A tree falls down. One person will hear it, the other one won't. Still very loud and very strong.
Is this succession of sense consciousness? I mean, there must be the hundreds and thousands of sense expressions in 1 minute. How can you tell them apart?
There's many types of sense expression in 1 minute. How can you tell them apart? Again, it's very difficult to tell them apart. If you start to slow down this procession, as it were, calm the mind down. It's one of the things, again, in a the jhana state, you have an almost continuity of just one sense expression. That's like the sustained attention. It's one thing just lasts for a long period of time without change. Obviously, that it is one thing arising, but the same thing coming up the next moment. But there, because things are still, you have an opportunity of seeing change.
Yeah, because it should be hard to distinguish, between certain pictures, say, seeing a film on the screen, they're very close together in time. So how can you say one thing is just one vijnana, as it were, not like many vijnanas, which are very similar?
Okay, you're asking that, giving a simile of like many pictures, many frames on a film, and the frames are moving so fast that you can actually see just one frame of a film just change to another frame of a film. Maybe they can say though that in this moment you can see one frame of a film, and a second later you know it's a different frame of the film. Maybe you're not taking in all the frames which happened in between, but you know there's change there. In this moment of consciousness, the next moment of consciousness you're aware of, or the next you can actually investigate rather than say aware of, maybe many moments of consciousness went in between, but at least knowing this one, and knowing one now, you can see that there's a difference there. The apple may change into an orange, the banana, coconut, another apple, banana, coconut, orange, banana, orange, coconut, grape, banana. But you've got the banana now, and the apple at the beginning. You can see that much. You can see they're different. Okay. That ends my talk for this evening.
So,